You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Good morning, and I have a thing that's been sticking in my craw this week, and I think it's one of those things where it's so small and stupid, but you just can't understand why this thing exists. And since you're the guy who always is able to see the other side of things, maybe you can explain to me why this exists.
I'm the guy who is always able to see the other side of the thing.
Yeah.
That's on my business card.
Yeah, as well, it's a very long business card.
My website, the guy who can always see the other side of the thing.
.com. No, .web.
.web.
.biz.
.eu.
Ooh.
All right, go ahead. What do you got?
What's the deal?
Please, you got to edit that out. Just edit out the what's the deal. you cannot ever start off with what's the deal.
Okay. What is the deal with guys who put their hang their sunglasses on the back of their collar?
On the back of their collar or on the back of their head?
Their head. Like, I've seen, you see this a lot, right? So we were out to lunch the other day or out to dinner the other day. And it's a thing you see pretty regularly. You know, like when you take your sunglasses off, you either put them up on your head or you hang them in your shirt. Or you put them. I usually put them in my shirt pocket, you know, when I'm not using them when I'm indoors. But there's just a lot of guys I see out there. They take their sunglasses and they hook them into the shirt, the back of their shirt, like on the.
Oh, okay. They hang them. They literally, like when you hang them on your front collar, they hang them on the back.
Hang them on the back.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I've seen that. Sure.
But why?
Well, this is I'm not going to argue the other side of this and say it's a good idea because it's not. But I will tell you why. And it's because these people, they exist in a two-dimensional world in which the only part of them that is presented to the public is what they see in the mirror. And so when they look in the mirror, they don't see the sunglasses. They assume you can't see the sunglasses either. It's like when you've got a child and you're playing hide and seek and they think if they can't see you, that you can't see them.
It's called object permanence.
There you go. Object permanence. That's exactly what it is for them. They can't see their sunglasses. Therefore, you can't see their sunglasses. I had this when I was a child. When I was in high school, my father used to famously comment that I would spend all this time on my hair and it looked great as long as you were standing in front of me. But if you were behind me, it was a disaster because I didn't care what was behind me.
Is it a certain thing, like when you have certain jobs, you can't wear a necktie, you know, like these are guys that if you hang it on the front, they're afraid it'll fall into their soup or something? Because to me, it's just trying to be, it's like I'm trying to be cool or different or whatever. Like, it's the same mentality. I get the same kind of like douche vibes from that as I do from people who back in park their cars.
Okay, yeah. I bet you you could do an academic paper and study that sine wave and you would discover with a Venn diagram that there is an unnatural amount of linkage between people who hang their sunglasses on the back of their shirt and people who back into spaces. Yes, that my son, my friend, that is a doctorate thesis waiting to happen.
Well, there you go. Now I'm gonna have to re-enlist in school because I'm gonna graduate on that. That's gonna be research study. That's going to take place in the American South, like dudes who park their trucks in backwards and wear sunglasses on the back of their shirt. Yeah.
What else? What else, by the way, would be, what else would, what other parts of this Venn diagram would all intersect at that same point? What about the backwards baseball cap?
Yeah, I never understood that. It sort of defeats the purpose of wearing a cap, you know, right. Unless that is, well, let's not say it. Unless you're the guy who wears a hat because you don't have enough hair or you're worried about your head or you're just trying to protect your head from getting sunburnt or you're ashamed of your baldness, whatever it is. But, you know, I don't understand. The backwards cap makes sense if you're working, you know, like let's say you got a ball cap on and then you're going to do some welding or something and you have to turn it around to put your welding mask on, I guess. I don't know.
I don't wear hats for the opposite reason. I don't wear hats because I have hair.
Yeah.
And when I wear hats, because I'm older, it's assumed that I must have a bald spot. I think people assume that there's no hair there. And so I don't wear hats for that very reason.
We used to live in a world where men wore hats. In fact, this is a true thing that happened yesterday. Intern Daniel, our studio intern, who graduated from college yesterday, and he had only a limited number of tickets to his graduation, and his family came from like Columbia and stuff, like to watch him graduate, and he wanted me to be there. He gave me one of the tickets to his graduation. He asked me if I'd be there. Nice. Isn't that lovely?
It's lovely.
And so after we got there, and then it's easy to find a seat at graduation if there's only one of you, by the way, because there's lots of empty spaces. So I got a seat right near the front. I took my camera. I got a picture of him walking across the stage. But right before the proceedings started, everybody would rise to sing the national anthem. And so we stood up, hand over the heart. And then it's on the announcement screen, it said, please rise for the national anthem. And gentlemen, please remove your hats.
Okay.
So just men. Only men have to take their hats off.
Right, right.
Why only men? And is this like a leftover thing from a time where men wore hats?
I don't know. And also, there's like who the official rulemaker is on what you do during the national anthem is also in dispute. And I have always felt that there is way too much emphasis placed on what you do during the national anthem and what it says about you. And things like that. I've always felt I bristle anytime people start to say this is a rule and you must do this thing every time this thing happens. I immediately start to go, I'm free to do whatever I want to do anytime I want to do it.
Darn right, this is America.
And so that not just with the national anthem, but with anything, I'm always going to go, no. If you want me to do something, give me a compelling reason to do it, not just because I'm telling you.
Yeah.
To. That's basically my.
Well, that's your basic personality when it comes to everything.
Yes, that's basically my personality when it comes to everything.
You have to do this, and then immediately you're not the compliant type. You don't just go, okay, I'll do it. And you start going, oh, I'm going to figure out why.
Give me a reason. Here's the thing: if you really want me to do something, you shouldn't have to tell me to do it. You should have created a situation in which I feel compelled to do it, in which I want to do it. That's the trick to getting people to do something is to make them, they don't even think about it. They're like, well, of course I'm going to do this. Or of course I'm. Well, we had a situation where we went yesterday to see the band play at the school because it's the end of band camp week. So at the end of band camp week, they just all set up real quick, like in the quad, and all the parents come out there and they play and they show what they learned that week. So my daughter's in guard, you know, the flag girl. She would, by the way, hate me for saying flag girl. She's in color guard. And so they come and they play a few songs. But what I thought was funny was they played the national anthem, but they weren't playing the national anthem because it was time to salute the flag. They were playing the national anthem to show that they had learned the national anthem because they have to play the national anthem at the football game.
So was there ambiguity about what everybody should do?
There was, because they started playing the national anthem, and I'm looking, and people are like hand over heart, and I'm looking around going, where's the flag? I'm looking for the flag because you're supposed to face the flag, and I'm like, where's the flag? And I'm looking around, and I realize, oh, they're not really, this isn't the national anthem. This is, we learned to play this song this week, and now we're practicing it for you. But still, you were like, so there's kind of a, are we, what, hmm?
That is such a Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David moment.
There you go. Is it the national anthem when they're not playing it for the flag, but rather just playing it to show you that they know how to play it?
Where's the flag? I don't know. Yeah.
And then they went into the couple of songs that they would be playing for the theme of the year. And you're going to love this. Mm. The theme of the year for the band, Gary,
is
James Bond.
Huh.
So they play the national anthem, and then they go right into ba-dum, ba-da, ta-da-da, ba-da-la, da-da-da.
I want to see the flag corps routine to that.
Yeah, right? Right. So it was very cool. And also, they have sabers. They have flags, and they have little pom-poms when they're in the stands. And then they have the rifle, and then they have the saber.
Okay.
And I'm watching them throw the saber and catch the saber. And by the way, they catch it on the blade all the time, which I think kind of defeats the whole point. If it's supposed to be a saber, no catching it on the blade.
Yeah.
They throw the saber and they twirl it. And I was thinking, watching it, they should just have batons.
Yeah.
Because you can do much more with a baton. And my wife said, you know, I think baton twirling is a dying art. And I'm like, yeah, you don't see baton twirlers as much as you used to. But why saber?
Not to mention, it sounds like the high school has started a paramilitary organization.
Well, that's what's really funny about all of this, is that all of it comes from ancient military. Yeah, the flags were used to signal the troops. You know, it all comes from ancient military, and yet we still do it. Instead of just creating something new specifically, they should create something new specifically that this was created because it looks good on a football field. That's why that's what they should do. Just come up with something specifically for your thing.
Yeah, like a hologram of Tupac. That's pretty cool. Every school should
always
have that.
Always looks good on a football field.
No question. Absolutely. So we have a brief segment. I just want to get to the segment that we hate to do this week, where we have to walk back some stuff, something that we talked about because we were wrong, and we are often wrong, which is normal for us. So in this segment called Retractions.
By the way, I think it would be okay for us to have a music stinger for this. I know you love the music stinger.
I do!
Okay, so let's have a music stinger. And whereas we have for photography news, we have the typical jingle, old school jingle. For retractions, we'll have the sustained. So retractions will be something like this. Retractions!
Okay.
Like what we call a stinger. Okay?
Okay, I got it.
So it's time for retractions.
Retractions!
There you go.
All right, that was pretty good.
Something like that. So we'll work on it over time, and that'll be our stinger. So our retraction this week, not surprisingly, is my retraction that I screwed up again.
Yes, always on the technical. So we've got a couple of comments from, let's see, Les Bogan. He says, how can Bu-Ray consider switching to Fuji and not know that the X-T3 is weather-sealed? Come on, full frame has better low ISO performance, no doubt. But if you want depth of field of view, full frame, 85, 1.8, you blah, 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 blah. Okay. So basically, Bu-Ray had said that the Fuji X-T3, which he's considering as an alternative to his Canon system, was not weather sealed. And that is absolutely incorrect. The Fuji X-T3 is weather sealed. And by the way, for the 12 of you who wrote in to let us know, we heard you.
Yeah. Well, that's great, though. It's great that many people knew and were able to write in and correct me. It is, in fact, weather sealed.
Yes.
And this is also the reason why on this week's show, when we do photography news and so forth, that Gary will be carrying most of the water, because I have been
diving deeply?
I've been deep diving into that world, and so all I've got in my head right now is the Fuji X-T3 versus the Canon 5D Mark III, and full frame versus versus crop sensor, and mirrorless versus DSLR, and I can't get it out of my head.
Yeah, this is interesting, because last week you had said that you were probably going to get one on loan.
Yes, I did.
To do a brief catch-up, right now Bu-Ray is at the point with his equipment where he's going to have to either upgrade inside a DSLR system or move to mirrorless, and then which system. And if you move from DSLR to mirrorless, there's no benefit from staying necessarily with the brand you have. All brands are now open to consideration.
Yes.
And in order to potentially save a lot of weight carrying camera gear around on the beach all day, looking at the crop sensor versus this. And so I don't want to necessarily go. I was going to ask you about it and ask you to go into detail on your discovery, but you're going to be doing a great series of YouTube videos on this whole thing.
I think I'm just going to do one. I think I'm going to do one. You and I have been talking about this during the week, and I think I'm just going to do one
video. It's
all
we've been talking about.
And the reason is because after working with the X-T3 this week, I only had to work with it once. I only had to take it to the beach and shoot one session with it. And to realize that all of the reasons for and against the X-T3 versus, say, the Canon that I have, or say whatever the next Canon's going to be, or the Sony, all of those reasons are minor. There is one major reason for not switching to the X-T3 that I cannot get past, and it's the ergonomics of the grip.
Well, let's do this. I'm going to put in the episode description, so open up your podcast app and scroll underneath. I'll put a link to Bu-Ray's YouTube channel. If you don't subscribe to that YouTube channel, and you're going to see this video. This has basically been all we've been talking about this week. We've been messaging back and forth, and I've been really eager, like, oh, how's it going?
Well, I've been very surprised that you've cared enough to ask me about it, because you know I go down the rabbit hole when you ask me, and I'm like, I can't believe he's asking me about
right,
how much time do you have just sit and listen to me talk about, you know, the minutiae of this camera versus that camera.
Like, yeah, I've never known anybody to willingly step on a landmine before. But
yes,
you, sir,
that's exactly what you're doing. It's a fantastic camera. Wonderful camera. Love the camera. Love the images. Love the way it looks. Love everything about it. Cannot stand the way it feels in my hand.
Yeah, well.
And for a pro shooter who holds a camera sometimes for 7-8 hours in a day, you can't get past this.
Right, but there is some hope.
Yes. There's a huge amount of hope.
So it is possible. So, all right, so check that out. There's be a link in the episode description, and I'm sure that you'll have that video up soon. And if you are listening to this later on down the road, it's probably already up. So check out the link and check out Bu-Ray's YouTube channel and subscribe so that he can know that you care. And that's about that. So for retractions, thank you for the 10 or 12 of you that let us know about that. So by the way, you know, I just wanted to talk a little bit about my experiences answering phones again this week, because
You're just so funny about this because I forget that for the longest time you haven't been talking to clients because you've had someone talking to clients for you. I forget that unlike the rest of us, you don't talk to clients every day, and now suddenly you are, and it's like weird for you.
Yeah, no, it is bizarre because it has been probably almost 3.5 years since I've never had to answer the phones.
That's Julie did it back.
Julie did it, and then we had Savannah working for us, and then we had Andrew, and then we had Robin, and now we don't have a studio admin at the moment, and we're just kind of getting our systems organized. It's really like getting in there and trying to, you know, use 17 Hats, which is our studio management software, to get everything so streamlined. And you really can't do that through a third person. You just got to get in there and make everything the way you want it and then train somebody to step into that job. So we're holding off on replacing that position. And so since Julie is 8 months pregnant and stays home with our girls, that leaves most of the phone answering to me. And so this is my weird experience, is that I think that the people who call, by and large, tend to be more strange.
Okay.
Like, I don't know why that is, because we get texts, Facebook messages, Instagram, emails, contact forms on the website. We get contacted by potential clients in a number of ways. But the ones who pick up the phone seem to be, they did the least research. They just Googled it and they clicked on push the call button, and they're just going to have you walk them through all their answers. Or two, they tend to border on the strange sometimes. And so this week I had a girl, a woman.
I know this story.
A grown woman call, and you know, I answered the phone. Hey, thanks for calling Hughes Fioretti Photography. This is Gary. How can I help you? And so she says, "Yeah, you guys take pictures?" I said, "Yeah, oh yeah."
Hence the word photography in the name.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, I'm like, okay, all right, this is going to be one of those. It's definitely going to be one of those. And so then she goes, "You take, I need to get some pictures done. How much for 3 pictures? I was like, 3 pictures? I said, "Well, you know, we don't really charge by the photo. We really charge by time, etc." And, you know, then she goes, "Okay, well, y'all do birthday pictures."
No. What and then it? You said, "We don't charge by time. Can you tell me some more about what you need?"
Oh, right. Yeah. So then I asked her kind of what she was looking for. She goes, "Well, I want some birthday pictures." I said, "Okay, so you want pictures like event photos of a birthday party, or do you want some personal photos to celebrate your birthday?" And basically what I'm doing is I'm finding out enough information so that I could disqualify her and send her to a colleague, because we only do pictures, commercial portrait photography. I don't do personal photography for the most part. And so she goes, "Well, I'm going to get a picture do you do cake pictures?" She said, "Do you do cake pictures?" And I said, "Okay, so do you want pictures just of a cake or of you with a cake?" And she goes, "Yeah, it's my 21st birthday, and I just want some pictures of me with my cake." And I thought, what?
You're not telling this story well. You're not telling this story well. This is not the way you told me.
Please tell the story then.
The way you told me was, she said, "I need 3 pictures. And you said, "We don't really do pictures this way. And, you know, can you tell me some more about what you need?" And she said, with a slight air of disdain, "I need pictures with my cake." And you said, like, "You need pictures of a cake?" And she said, "No, I need pictures with my birthday cake." And she said it in such a way as to imply, "You're an idiot for not understanding what I mean when I say that I need pictures of my cake," as if everybody on the universe goes to a professional photographer and has pictures taken with their birthday cake.
Exactly.
On their 21st birthday. That was the great thing about this story, is that you imparted to me that she seemed to have a certain expectation.
Right.
That you would absolutely understand. Like, maybe you were a birthday cake 21st birthday specialist.
Right.
And you would understand exactly what she was looking
for. Which is funny enough, I was just looking back through our messaging conversation, and I found, because I texted you immediately after it happened, and I just want to, so here's a conversation I just had. "How much for 3 photos? "Well, we don't really charge by the photo, but give me an idea of what the photos are for." "Birthday cake."
Yeah, birthday cake.
She just,
boom. Let me just drop that on the table like a giant encyclopedia.
She just said birthday cake.
Like, birthday cake is what I want, dude. Birthday cake.
Okay, so pictures at a birthday party or pictures of a cake? She says, "Pictures of me with a cake for a birthday."
Okay.
Like, okay. All right.
And to which I said, "Will you be naked with this cake?"
She made me feel dumb or she acted like I was an idiot for not immediately knowing what she was talking about.
Right. Yeah, right. I've gotten that before. I had that happen with graduation once where a guy wanted graduation photos, and it took 10 minutes to get out of him that he wanted me to come to his graduation ceremony and take some pictures of him and his family.
Right.
And, but 10 minutes to get that out of him because he assumed that that was something that everybody did.
Right. Well, the other thing I have a lot now is when people call and they ask for something that we don't do. They want senior portrait photography or wedding photography or something. And the thing that they... I'll always recommend them. I say, well, here's who I would recommend, and here's the website that you can go to and get all the information. And inevitably, the question I get immediately following is, well, do you have their phone number? And I go, I'm sure it's on their website.
Right. Yeah, I'm not your consigliere.
Yeah.
I'm not your...
I'm not the concierge, yeah.
The concierge, you know, just...
just... I literally just told you the website and who to go to, and I'm helping you. I'm referring you to someone, a colleague who I trust will take a good care of you. And you want me to give you to go there for you and find the phone? Do you want me to call them and make an appointment?
Yeah, let me call and set up an appointment for you.
And you want me to do that too? And at the same time, I don't think it's... If I get enough of those calls, I imagine myself like in the 90s, I'm having like 6 or 7 post-it notes on my wall with the numbers of my friends who I refer for different specialties. Right. Just, oh, absolutely, yeah, I've got that right here, no problem.
No, you have a Rolodex. You have a big Rolodex.
Ooh,
is what you have.
Yeah. I'm not...
a big Rolodex.
I'm not a photography switchboard service, people. I'm not... I'm being nice to refer you to somebody. I could just go, no, I'm sorry. Good luck with your search. I'm like, no, I'm going to help you out.
I had a thing happen this week where you're telling somebody what you can do for them and how much it's going to cost. And you tell them how much it's going to cost and you immediately know that they're done. You know, like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
In the minute you tell them.
Yep.
You know, and it's a shame because she had texted me and she says, I'm getting married at the Florida Aquarium. Is it harder to shoot at an aquarium? Have you ever shot at an aquarium? Are you local? Are you booked? Do you do weddings? And I came back and said, yes, I do weddings. Yes, I'm local. Yes, it's harder in an aquarium. Yes, I've shot at that aquarium many times. Here's a link to some pictures I've shot at that aquarium. Oh, that's fantastic. Da, 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 da. How much are you? Here's how much I am. Thank you. Just, you know, the minute you tell them how much, thank you. And you realize, oh, you were looking for somebody to come do your pictures for $300.
Yeah, it's sad. There is such an unrealistic expectation of what photography costs, you know? And now I don't know if you've heard this, the service Snapper, which we've talked about before, right, which is basically like the Uber of photography services. And so for some reason, I don't know if their Facebook advertising people are really bad, but I see their ads, their sponsored ads all the time. I'm like, I'm not the intended person. Maybe they want me to sign up as a photographer with them or whatever. But I always leave a comment on the ad just because why not? So I'll just leave a little comment and I'll say, you know, this is a really good thing for people to learn how not to purchase photography or something like that. I'd be like, you know, this is photographers undervaluing their work and hurting the industry, blah, 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 or something. And then so one popped up on Instagram yesterday. And I commented on it, and I said, you know, it's you're rolling the dice trying to determine, or you're rolling the dice on this because more than likely you're going to get a photographer who doesn't really know what they're doing, because a photographer who knows what they're doing would probably not, probably not sell their work for this price. And so I got a comment in reply to my comment from. Apparently from a photographer who does work for Snapper, and was like,
ooh.
Yeah. He goes, and he said, well, I've booked with Snapper 80 times this year. Would you say I don't know what I'm doing?
At what, $50 a gig?
I don't know what it's very little. It's very, very little. And basically, I'm not sure if you can set your rates or if there's a tiered system, but let's just say even their top tier is less than half of what you would want to get paid for.
Let's say it's a headshot. Let's say their top tier is $100.
I that would be high. That's what Snapper would charge, and you'd get half that.
Okay, so let's say it's 50, which means I booked 80 times this year. Would you say that I'm what? Do you say I'm professional?
$4,000 for 80.
$4,000 for 80 jobs? Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I'd say you're bad at your job. Yeah, whether that's the business side. Anyway, so
I would. That's 1.5 times a week that you're working, and at the end of the year you get $4,000.
Yeah, that's
horrible.
Yeah, that's real bad. Real, real, real bad. So basically, I replied to the guy's reply, and I said, thank you for replying to this. I'm really truly interested. Why would you charge so little? And so I went to his Instagram because I was all on Instagram, and then I looked at his work and I go, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah. He is exactly the type of person that I think would work with him. He shows some skill, a complete lack of some fundamentals, but a decent eye and the ability to get a good exposure and do some creative stuff, but definitely not a person who can walk into any situation and execute something at a professional level. Definitely not.
Let me ask you this, Gary Hughes. When did you think that you were a professional photographer? What year? And then tell me, what year were you really a professional photographer?
Good question. That's a great question.
Because I can tell you that I thought I was a professional photographer at year X. And now when I see people whose work is at that level, I go, no.
Oh, dude, no. I thought I was a cat's pajamas probably like 08.
Yeah, right out of the bat, right out of the bag. You're like, I'm a cat's pajamas. And then 5 years later, you go, oh, my God, I was so not.
That's the kind of narcissism you get with creative professionals. It's just, we just assume that we're artists and whatever we make is good. And then on the other side of that, you've got that rampant insecurity in equal parts where you really just believe that you suck. But outwardly, when I started trying to charge for my work and stuff, I was definitely not where I am now. But truly, there's a double-edged sword there, is because you are hoping that you're good enough to put your work out there and get paid, but secretly you always feel like you're not. But then always down the road, you should be able to look back and say, like, geez Louise, I had no idea what I was doing. I can't believe I used to do things that way. So you should always be improving, and you shouldn't be so hard on yourself for not knowing everything. You can't say you can't be a professional until you know everything there is to know. Otherwise, photography conferences would have no one in attendance. You know, there just wouldn't be anybody there because everybody would already know everything. But I would say probably by my standards today, I would say probably about 4 or 5 years in before I would be like, yeah, I would probably hire that guy myself. Like, would I hire myself to do the job? Would I hire my company?
Right.
And I would say probably not until I was in the business about 4 or 5 years.
I was contacted this week by a company to do headshots. This was a service that provides headshots. And they sent me a thing saying, we'd like to add you to our team. And they're building, I don't know, they have a website, you know, your fantastic webshots, you know, headshots.com.
I got that email too.
You got that. Did you look at the pricing and stuff?
No, I didn't. I didn't even consider
it. Okay, the pricing, not that bad compared to what you normally get. A headshot in studio was $200 or something like that. A headshot on location was a little bit less, maybe. What I found interesting was that their pricing structure had headshots in studio were more expensive than headshots on location. And I'm flipped. Headshot in studio is cheaper. You come to me and let me shoot you in the studio, that's cheaper. I charge you more money if I have to go to your office.
Right, but for somebody who's got overhead, I guess they assume that they, you know, it's more expensive to maintain a studio, and so studio photographers will, you know.
But everyone wants you to come to them, so you're better off charging more money for that. But
yeah,
the pricing wasn't that bad, so then I wrote back to them and I said, you know, I looked at the thing, I said, you keep 100% of the fee. And so I answered the email, and I said, if I keep 100% of the fee, how do you make money? And he wrote back, we sell advertising on the site. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I saw a couple. I looked in your area when I saw the website, and I looked in my area to see who was. And we know a couple of people that are listed on it already.
It's one of those things where you sign up and you go, you know, just in case this website blows up and suddenly starts getting, you know, SEO traction, and I want to be on this. I want to be on that list, I guess. But you're going to be on that list for less money than you are charging now.
Yeah, I can't have an avenue where my services cost less money than they do regularly. I can't.
Right.
Like, I can't. Like, I'll find my own clients.
Right. See, I do have that. It's very tricky for me. I do have an avenue where my services cost less money. And that avenue is, if you're a tourist and you want a picture of your family on the beach at this particular beach that I pick, at this particular time that I pick, for a length that's exactly this, and you're only going to get this, it's less money than I would normally charge for a family portrait.
Right.
And it's because that's the market for that particular thing. And so if you try and go over it, you can't. You'll never book it. And that's a tough thing to handle. But and unfortunately, that's what these services are doing to headshots, is they're driving them down. People think, oh, a headshot's $50.
Yep. They do.
And it's not. A good one is not.
No, it
certainly
is not.
Certainly on a Gary Hughes head. I mean, there's such a huge difference between the sort of things that you do or I do when it comes to headshots and then someone who just meets you in a park and takes a natural light picture of you for your realtor business card.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, there's a huge difference, and you just have to hope that people can see that.
Yeah, hope so. But, you know, that's the thing is if somebody doesn't see it, they're not ready to be your client yet. I photographed a guy this week who said that he's been following us on social media for 2 years before he decided to hire us. Isn't that interesting?
I have a problem. The problem I have with social media is that I was thinking about this the other day. It's tough. Like, say you're a wedding photographer, right? Or a baby photographer. It's tough to get followers and grow followers and keep them because the sort of photography that you do, a person typically only needs it for a short time in their life, and then after that, they're not so interested anymore. So if you're having a baby, then maybe you're following this great baby photographer on Instagram and you're loving their stuff. But once you've had the baby and your baby is now too old for baby pictures anymore, you don't want to look at baby pictures so much on your Instagram feed.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's the same thing with weddings. If you're getting married, then you love the wedding pictures I post to my Instagram feed. If you're already married or not getting married, then that stuff, you know, that's, I get 20 likes for that.
Yeah, but your head gets into a different space because then you're married, then you start, you move into a house, and
right.
You're not worried about wedding photos anymore.
Right, which is why, like, with my Instagram feed, only one picture in 5 or 8 is actually like a wedding. Because
right.
No one ever, I don't get like the high-end wedding photography pictures I put up get 20 likes, and then the picture of a mango that looks like somebody's head gets 300 likes, and so.
Yeah, if you're a wedding photographer, your social media following, if it's big, isn't brides.
No, it's other
like photographers. They follow you at first when they're looking for someone, but then they stop interacting with you. So your active
right.
followers are not brides-to-be,
right.
And if they are, they're not going to be brides-to-be for long. Your active followers are going to be other wedding photographers, other wedding vendors, stuff like that. So
right.
I'm sure that there are exceptions to that, but by and large, there is a time limit on that for sure. Like when your potential client is no longer interested in looking at wedding photos anymore.
And headshots right. are particularly hard, and I think it's really hard for you because most headshots done really well, they all look kind of the same. The whole point of your headshots is that they look really good. The light
what
is
you
right.
Trying to, what are you trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is that you're consistent good, and you have a great look. The only thing that differs from headshot to headshot on yours is the actual person who's in the headshot.
Ouch, I disagree. I disagree.
I mean, there are times, let me tell you, there are times you have to get creative for a certain thing. But, you know, a headshot on white with a clamshell configuration and a kicker light is going to be, unless you're a photographer, I'm talking about to the layman.
Right.
Photographer could look at your pictures and go, oh, he did a little something different here. But a layman just sees a beautiful, fantastic headshot on white. And so then, and it's like those people, and you know you see these all the time, and I see them especially in my, not in stories on Instagram, but in stories on Facebook, where it's just nothing but pictures of girls in bikinis, and they're not lit or anything. And you know that it's just a case of a guy who likes taking pictures of girls in bikinis and girls who want pictures of themselves and girls in bikinis who do it for trade. And so he just takes them and puts them on his Instagram. And people look at them because it's a girl in a bikini. Not because,
right.
not because it's a good photograph of a girl in a bikini.
Well, there are a lot of thirsty dudes out there, Bouray.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and they put those pictures up, and I wonder when I see that, I wonder, do they think that they're like, do you think you're a photographer? Because you're not. You're an Instagram boyfriend. That's all you are.
Insta husband, baby.
Yeah, that's all you are. If you're just taking, if she's just standing there and modeling in her bikini, and you're just taking snapshots and then giving them to her and also posting them online, you're not a photographer. You're just a guy who likes taking pictures of girls in bikinis. You know,
I'm not mad at that though.
I'm not mad either. I'm not saying I don't like seeing it. You know, but I don't. Like if I see it in my feed, I don't click on it because I'm like, you know, a girl in bikini. Okay, show me something. I want to see your talent in the picture.
Well, that's how a photographer looks at things, for sure. Yeah, but your average person probably has no concept of that at all.
Yeah, and they come, oh, great picture. And I'm thinking, it's not a great picture, it's a great model.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's different.
Fair
if
enough.
I take a picture of Halle Berry, it's going to be a great picture no matter what I do.
Yeah, take that hot model out and like put me in that picture
yeah.
instead. It's not nearly as interesting.
And then show me something.
Yeah.
You know, you take a good picture of me, now you're getting some compliments.
Yeah, show me something that you can do with a person who's just normal. Like, show me that. Maybe a little pudgy, you know, maybe a little disheveled. Do something good there. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
You can cherry pick gorgeous people all day long, and how much of the photo is the gorgeous person and how much is the photographer. And photographers can tell the difference, just like a musician can listen to a song and separate it into its parts in their head. But a regular person just isn't trained to do that. They go, oh my God, that's an amazing picture. So there's an argument to be made there, but you know what? Now's not the time. Now is the time for our next segment.
It's time for photography news.
Photography news. Nice.
I have no photography news.
I have lots of photography news.
Because I've been doing nothing but diving deep into the Fuji X-T3. So I have no like hardcore photography news.
I'm
counting on you to carry us.
I do. I will, like usual. First of all.
So unnecessary. So unnecessary.
Ouch, huh? That hurts, doesn't it?
That was terrible. That was terrible. I can tell you, sir, I can tell you that you have said on this very podcast that the podcast starts the same way every time, which is we open the show and then I have something to talk about.
Right.
So you do not carry us.
Did it hurt kind of like when you told me all my pictures look the same?
They do.
Oh,
that's not a bad thing. You are one of the best headshot photographers in the country. You have perfected. I mean, I don't understand what am I doing. I not all your pictures, but I'm talking about, you know, headshot on white for a corporate headshot on white is a corporate headshot on white. Here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready for the thing?
I'm ready for the thing. Is it here?
The hard thing to do, Gary Hughes, is to go anywhere, anytime, with anybody and produce the same result. That is talent and skill in photography. That is every bit as hard as being creative with each person that you shoot, is producing the same thing. Now you're in this office where they've got you in a closet, and you're in this other office where they've got you right next to a window and there's sun coming in, and yet every time your headshots are right on.
Okay, well, I'm going to take that as a compliment with objection. I'm going to take it. I strenuously put a little asterisk on it, but I'll take the compliment.
No. You talk to photographers who are coming up. You talk to photographers who are learning. You talk to photographers who come to see you speak. And that is what impresses them about you. That's what they want to learn how to do because they can't. They're scared to death when they get call and they got to go to that office to shoot those headshots. They're scared to death. They're going to get in that room and they're not going to be able to produce for that client what that client has seen on their website. Hmm. That is what scares the crap out of photographers. It's not, oh, I could come up with a creative way to take a picture of you, because anything can be creative. Look, this is very creative because there's a bad shadow on your face. That's creative, you know. What's hard is to be able to overcome all adversity to create something that's exactly what they wanted. And that's what you do, no matter where you are, convention center, I don't care what you're doing, your shots always look like they were done in a studio.
Okay, I'll take it.
You know, that and that is a very unique and special skill to have.
I'll take it if you just stop talking about it.
Okay. Well, I just don't want you to think for a second that I'm saying that, you know, no.
All right. It's okay. I forgive you. All right. In photography news, this is coming from, of course, DP Review. We have a really, really cool plugin now. And I have been courting this for a while, moving to Capture One for my tethered shooting and for my processing. Right now, I use Canon Digital Photo Professional in the studio to process my images. But when I'm on location, I'm shooting tethered. I've been using Lightroom for a long time, and everybody's screaming at me, I got to switch to Capture One. Well, Capture One just came out of beta. I've officially added a new feature where they have a plug-in for JPEG Mini. And if you're not familiar with JPEG Mini, this is a service that you can subscribe to that will basically reduce the file size of your JPEGs by 40 to 50% some cases, or sometimes even more, up to 75% they claim, without reducing the quality of the image. So you can get 75%, they say, smaller files, but you would have to use JPEG Mini as a standalone piece of software, which means you have to process all your images, output the JPEGs from whatever software you use, and then put them into JPEG Mini and let JPEG Mini squish them all, which takes a while, by the way. That, you know, it actually adds another 15 or 20 minutes to your process, to your workflow. Oh. And so it's a real, like, it's one of the only reason I never use JPEG Mini is because it's just another process to use.
Why would you? If it takes 20 minutes to do it, what does it save you?
Correct.
What
does exactly. it save you? Saving you the 20 minutes of upload time? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're trying to cut down on your upload time. It takes you 20 minutes to do it. You know, and the other thing you would want to do it for would be your storage costs, you know, for right. your drives to store it. But memory is so damn cheap.
Well, here's the thing. Now, JPEG Mini has a plugin for Capture One. So you can do a regular export of your images to JPEG from Capture One, and it uses that JPEG Mini compression algorithm on the way out. So it doesn't add anything to your regular workflow. It will just produce JPEGs that are up to 75% smaller in your natural workflow if you're using Capture One, which I think is a pretty excellent way to use JPEG Mini. It's probably, to me, I would love to see this come to Lightroom. I would love to see this, you know, be more pervasive, because the thing that I don't want to do is add another piece of software into my workflow
right. Just
because it's supposed to save you time, but it doesn't. And this way, it actually saves you time and gives you great compression, which I think is pretty fantastic. So that is actually pretty cool. We got a link to that on the Facebook page. And if you're not following us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/photobombpodcast. So when we talk about listeners writing in and interacting with us and the stories, we post all this stuff on the page. And there will be a link to our Facebook page in the episode description. So next article of news.
By the way, I may be looking at that Capture One as well, because they say that it deals with the files that come out of Fuji better than any of the other.
Right.
Software.
Yeah. Well, I've tested it and I've downloaded the trial, and Capture One is second best in producing image quality in my estimation for Canon, next to Digital Photo Professional, which does a brilliant job of doing those raw conversions, but it's just slower and kind of clunkier. Where Capture One is, it's almost like Lightroom on steroids. It's a pretty amazing piece of software
really?
So far. Yeah, it's pretty wild. And it's, for example,
for those of you who don't know, Digital Photo Professional is Canon's in-house software.
Yeah, it's the software that comes with the camera. Right. And but we've talked about this on the show before. If you shoot Canon, take some raw files, shoot a color target, and then just don't even do anything. Just open them in Camera Raw or Lightroom and just look at the raw file, and then open that same raw file in Digital Photo Professional. And if you can't look at them side by side and see a difference, you're blind, and it's fine. But
you showed me about a year ago with a client photo that you sent me the two files, and it was wow. There was no doubt that the ones that were processed with Canon's proprietary software were better.
Yeah, I mean, it's by comparison, using anything else makes your pictures look like orange mush to me now. But my eye is now trained for that. And so going over to Capture One, it's closer than Lightroom. But anyway, so you can, let's say with Capture One, let's say you can create an output that will make four different size versions of the file for a client. So you shoot a headshot and they want full, medium, blah, 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 and certain crops. You can actually make that all part of one fluid action that will export all at once and cool stuff like that. It's got some really, really neat features. But anyway, so that's pretty cool. Check that out. Now moving on, Sony announces dramatic drop in forecasted sales. So this is a pretty interesting news story. We pulled this one off of F-Stoppers. And this one has some pretty interesting implications. And we've been talking about Sony and how it's pushed the market so much, and how it is a consumer electronic company that's putting out lots of stuff on a way, way faster schedule than the traditional camera companies. And so in their forecast, they just put out their earnings report and their forecast for the next year. And you can get this right off of Photo Rumors or off of F-Stoppers, that they are projecting selling 3.6 digital cameras or 3 million digital cameras in 2019, as opposed to 4.4 million in 2017, 3.6 million in 2018. So we're basically losing a huge, huge amount of sales, which could indicate a shrinking market overall. It could indicate an oversaturated market, because, of course, these same types of problems have plagued Canon and Nikon and most other camera companies. But even though Sony's on top, they are producing all these cameras, but they're predicting that their numbers, their sales are going way, way down for 2019, and then even lower probably for 2020. So the question is this a problem that they've created, or does this indicate what's going on with the professional camera market?
I think it's an indication of the professional camera market, but I also think that they are, I don't know. I mean, I feel they're producing new cameras too quickly. That, yeah, I don't know, because that's such a niche marketing thing that you'd really have to be with those guys to understand how that works. You know, is it more valuable to you to produce a new camera every other year in a line than it is to have that camera last for 3 or 4 years. By the way, I read, this reminds me of something I read on a website in a comment section the other day when they were talking about a new Canon camera. And the guy said, and someone said, yeah, every 3 years, Canon comes out with a new camera that's 3 years old.
Ouch.
I thought, ow, that's bad. And the next guy goes, it's funny because it's true.
Well, that's all. None of the camera companies come out with a new camera in the line every year to 18 months, and Sony's been doing that. And it seems they're pushing really, really hard into a market that is protracting, which is kind of, or retracting, which is interesting.
That's what I find interesting, is that they seem to be chasing the dragon here. They seem to be saying, okay, well, you know, fewer and fewer people are buying Sync cameras, so we're going to put out even more brands. And I'm not, I guess that's one way to go after them.
I'm laughing at chasing the dragon.
Chasing the dragon. Which is actually, I think, a drug reference, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. It's okay. A drug reference.
They're chasing the monkey. They're chasing the three-legged raccoon in a dumpster behind the Chinese restaurant wearing a military army jacket.
A surplus army jacket, smoking a cigarette, with two fingers.
That's a deep callback for those of you who've been with us from the beginning. When you've got a store and fewer people are buying from your store, you stock more merchandise. I guess that's their...
You know, what are you going to do when you sell 800,000 less units in 2019 than in 2018?
I don't know. What I don't understand about them is that they're stocking more merchandise, but they're stocking more of the same merchandise. So that's why I don't understand that theory that if we sell more, yes, if you're stocking more different types of cameras, then maybe you can pick up some more business. But if you're just discontinuing the A7 III because now that's the A7 IV, you haven't. Are there people who are going to buy the A7 IV who wouldn't have bought the A7 III today?
I don't know. These things cost a lot of money for your average person, you know, and most people just can't afford to buy a new one every time it comes out.
Here's what you have to know. Here's what we don't know. What we don't know is, and I'm sure they know this, what we don't know is how many people who have the A7 II bought the A7 III, which means how many people who have the A7 III will buy the A7 IV. Because if that number is substantial, then it's worth coming out with a new model every year and a half if you're getting people who are upgrading that quickly.
Well, I think that people aren't necessarily buying every one that comes out, although I'm sure there are some. I think that what's happening is people will buy one, and then every time a new one comes out and the specs get better and the tech gets better, the people who are on the fence the last one that came out will finally make the switch from another format. You know? And I think, so what's happening
is... But if that's the case, you could just wait.
Right. Well, they could wait. I predict that you'll probably see a slowdown in how fast they're coming out with new models. Because now they're not incentivized to. Because you've got to realize that they've now... They're pretty much cornering the full frame mirrorless market, and it's across the board. People are like, they're the way to go, blah blah. Especially Jim Ferrara, this is the way to go. But you know, now that they've really come out guns blazing, like just going hard in the paint, making sure they're taking over the market, and now everybody's like, well, these are the ones, and we're just waiting on these other camera companies to see what they're gonna do.
Right.
To see whether or not we're going to stay with our brand, because everybody is going to switch to mirrorless eventually. It's just going to happen. These camera companies are going to stop making their DSLRs in droves over the next few years. And so if you have to switch to mirrorless, then you don't have to stay with the brand you're with. So this is an opportunity to say, this brand is now doing something really, really good. So your brand that you're used to is going to have to do something to convince you to stay with them. And right now, as far as I can tell, that's not really happened a whole lot. People are looking around like they've never looked around before.
Here's the thing interesting about what you just said, though. Could it be that the whole, we're going to come out with a new dang camera every year in the A7 line, or every 2 years?
It's about 18 months, I think.
About 18 months. Could that be what they're trying to do there is they're trying to fix it so that if you've said to yourself, okay, I've got to make the jump to mirrorless, guess what? Sony just came out with a brand new camera that's their very best mirrorless camera ever.
Right. Yeah.
Which because I've got to tell you, I certainly paid attention when I was, because I'm thinking about it right now, and because I had that lens break and I didn't know if I was going to have to make the jump right now. And then bam, the A7 IV drops, and I was like, oh, If I made the jump to Sony, I'd be getting their latest and greatest right out of the box.
Or the A7 III just dropped in price.
Or the A7 III just dropped in price. But mostly I'm thinking I can, you know, because it's when you have to make a jump like that and you're buying the latest and greatest from a camera manufacturer, but it's 2 years old, you're like, oh, I bet if I could just wait another year, you know, that they'd come out with the next one. I don't want to buy it. And then a year later, they come out with the next one. I don't want to buy the Mark II when they come out with the Mark III a year later.
Right.
And they may be saying this is what how they're fixing that, is that what they're really going after is not the people who are bought the A7 II and now buy the A7 IV. They're going after the people who are thinking about making the jump. They want to have always a camera that is only 6 months or a year old at the top of their line waiting for you when you go.
That's an interesting way to look at it. So we'll stay tuned on that. I think that there's a little bit of column A, column B in this, but there's no question that lots of people have been switching, but doesn't seem that even with all of that that they've been doing, that they're immune to the overall effect of people just buying less cameras less often in the industry. Now,
what do you think is going to happen? You might have this on your list of photography news. What do you think is going to happen when the new Canon drops?
Yeah, this is the next story. I got this from Canon Rumors. And so this is rumored, but it's been rumored from a bunch of different sources that I've seen. So it's pretty much going to happen. Canon is going to be discontinuing their 5DS and 5DSR series, which is basically the 50 megapixel full-frame DSLRs. Now, these are pretty cool cameras. They put out pretty amazing image quality. But they were probably, for a while, they were the highest megapixel count you could get on a full-frame DSLR. Now, that is the Sony A7 R4, which is 60 megapixels or some odd thing like that. So now Sony has more megapixels than Canon's megapixels. And so Canon is apparently getting ready to drop their new camera, which is supposed to be in excess of 70 megapixels. And this is going to be in the R series.
Right.
So this is going to be a mirrorless for the new system that's going to be a full-frame sensor with 70-plus megapixels. And so the question is, does anybody who cares about the megapixel? So I got a little bit of feedback from...
I do.
I got a little bit of feedback from a couple of our listeners. And let me find that one here. I was ready with it a second ago. Ah, here it is. Okay. So we got Jimmy Gates says, I would love to see what an 80 megapixel image from the rumor camera would look like. If the noise is low and has a fairly good low light capability, then I would consider it. Richard says, I barely utilize 30 megapixels in the 5D4 for the work I do, which is weddings, events, etc. I often shoot in medium raw when I know that the large file is just a waste of space, so it would not be a camera for me. I imagine the commercial dudes shooting for billboards and that sort of thing would love it. Horses for courses, I guess, he says. And Jerry Wade says, another nail in the coffin. So,
I'm not sure what that means. Is he saying in the coffin for Canon?
I'm not really sure. I assume okay. So. Yeah, he's probably a Sony guy, I would imagine. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But so, would you be interested in 80 megapixels?
Yes, I would. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to see what it looks
but again,
like?
it's only because it's particular to what I do. And if you saw what I do when I'm shooting events, especially, yeah, you shooting portraits and stuff? No. You know, because you're going to get right in camera. But when you're shooting events, when you're shooting dance floor stuff, you're shooting a dark hall, you are shooting wide a lot. And you're shooting wide because you want to shoot with a very wide aperture.
So you're cropping in a ton.
And I'm cropping like crazy. I will crop half that image away. You give me an 80 megapixel file, I could crop 2/3 of my image away and still have a very, very usable file. That's A, number
you could
one.
You could print a 40-inch canvas from something like that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Right? So you take a pic, and you can take a picture of a dance floor, and then you look, and over on the left-hand side of that picture is a great shot of somebody doing something goofy that you want to give them as an option for the album. But you need to isolate that person, so you crop them. And I'm telling you, I have a lot of my pictures where I crop, you know, crop half that picture away. And so I have an 80, whoo, that means that's nothing. Now I crop half the picture away, I've got a picture that's the equivalent of what I'm shooting now.
Well, I've got a couple of concerns about this. One is that if I get an 80 megapixel camera, I feel like I'm just going to have to replace my computer too. You know, you have to get double the memory, storage space is going to change. It's more than double the size. And so I don't know that I would use 80. If they're like most Canons, if it has like a medium RAW, the medium RAW will still be bigger than the 30 megapixels I'm using now.
Well, maybe it adds a whole new thing to your shooting style if you're someone like me, because it could be the same thing for me. It could very well be that now I would set up a button so that I could quickly switch because I'm shooting medium RAW, but then when it comes to dance floor stuff, boom, boom, give me the big size ones, and I'll shoot all this with the big size ones, and then I'll go back to medium RAW for everything else.
I think for most pros, I think I speak for most pros when they say 80 megapixels would be sure cool to look at, but I don't need it for most of the stuff that I shoot. If they come out with an 80 megapixel camera and it has the thumb dial, dual card slots, an articulating screen, and improved battery life, I'm gonna buy it. But I would I would love to see a 50 megapixel version of this, or a 40 megapixel version, because you know this is going to be expensive. And now, according to the article, they're testing out a couple of new different sensor technologies that they've been upgrading to. The thing that concerns me about this is that with the 5DS and the 5DSR, the problem with having that many transistors onto that size sensor, packing them in so tightly, is that it's very, very prone to blurring and camera shake. And so I think that more than a DSLR that's 30 megapixels, you got 50 megapixels, you've got to be rock solid or you're going to get some pretty wicked blur in your images. So you'll have a very high resolution blurry photo. And so,
which is funny because having a high resolution image helps you with your sharpness when you're looking at something on a computer monitor. Because the smaller, you know, if you're looking at an image at 15%, how many times have we looked at an image in Photoshop at 25%? We go, oh, this is good. And then we look, get it in and blow it up. And we're like, oh, crap, it's out of focus.
Yeah, not so much. Yeah, it looks good on the LCD screen, not when you put it on your big monitor. So I'm interested to see how they're going to combat that. They've had that problem with 50 megapixels on the 5DS and the 5DSR. And so what's that going to do with the same size sensor and it's 80 megapixels, so packed in there. Yeah. So they're going to have to really bring some new technology to bear to sort of combat that, and I'm waiting to see where that goes. But
if they can't do that, if it's not every bit as good as the 50 megapixel or the 40 megapixel sensors, then there really is no point in going to 80. It really is a stupid marketing thing.
Yeah, it is just, it's just to get the crown back, the megapixie crown. Right. You know, you're king of the megapixies, so good for you.
I'm still waiting very, very much for the 70 to 200 millimeter zoom for the R series to come out. I want to see this baby zoom when it
it looks pretty small, which is
It's the size of a 24 to 70 millimeter lens, but it's a 70 to 200. That's a game changer for guys like me who spend the whole day with that big ass giant 70 to 200 lens on their camera to be able to have, you know, that lens be the size of a 24-70. You know, but it's going to have so much glass in it. It's going to have so many elements. In order to do that, it's going to have more elements in it, you know?
I don't know. We'll see. It looks pretty cool. To have one that's half the size would be really nice. It'd be pretty cool. So I know that we're getting towards the end of our time here. Just want to read a little bit more feedback from the article about JPEG Mini. We have Dave Kalmbach says, smooth like butter, having used it for thousands of images since January in the beta, so much quicker than the old way of needing to drop the images onto JPEG Mini after processing in Capture One. Richard says, JPEG Mini is awesome. Jimmy says, does JPEG Mini hold more color bit depth than the data and than the old JPEGs? And to that, I say, I have no clue. And so what we've really been waiting for is to give you Jim Ferrara's feedback on our conversation regarding Sony. He says, because we've joked that he was screaming about Sony. He says, yes, I am screaming Sony, and this is coming from someone who saved up for the Nikon's F4 in 1990. Showing your age there, Jim. Switching from my Canon A1. I love Nikon over the years, still do, but for weddings, not anymore. Also, Bure, you won't like the smaller image in the viewfinder for the crop sensor. Just like the chefs in Naples said decades ago, put cheese on that pizza. Trust me, I'm telling you, with 35 years of being into photography, shooting from crop sensor to large format film, Sony, with exclamation parts. So there he goes. Yeah, so thanks. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
I can tell you after shooting a session with the X-T3 that I loved the color. I loved the images. They look fantastic. I showed you, you know, straight out of the camera. Beautiful, fantastic. Love that camera.
Yeah. So we had just a couple more bits of feedback on, I posted about the Face app, but they're saying everybody's doing to show their face old, you know, like, and putting smiles on.
I did that, and it showed me the same picture.
Yeah. That's a good one. I saw one of Paul Rudd, you know, actor Paul Rudd, who's notoriously not aged a day in 25 years. And so the face app just shows him the same.
Same like, picture.
Looking the same young. Actually, a little bit younger. So there was some concern because it's by a Russian software company and blah, 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 America. People are like, they're stealing your identity and stuff. But there's real genuine concern giving a full, like, map of your face, which is being used as security now more and more for different things. And so there's an interesting article from medium.com that I posted on the Facebook page about it. And so regarding FaceApp and the security issues, we had a little bit of feedback. Steve Bennett says, sod the privacy and usage rights. I'm not keen on seeing myself in mirrors, so that app held nothing good for me. Let's see. Alex Carter says, I avoided messing with it for all of the obvious reasons. Of course, my sister-in-law decided to use it to age one of my pictures and then sent it to me because she's nice like that. So I guess it doesn't matter how we feel about it. It's happening. And unless we remove all of our images, we are vulnerable to this and other predatory apps. Bill John says, they already have all of our information as it is. They already use it as they see fit. There's really no such thing as privacy on the internet. And Sean Cantrell says, dirty. Makes me feel dirty.
I'm just imagining, like 10 years from now, there's a convicted terrorist on death row. And, you know, the terrorist in the next cell is calling over him. You know, the person on the next cell is calling over. How did they catch you? How did they get you, Abdul? And he's going, in 2019, I uploaded my picture to a face app to find out what I would look like as a Martian. And they used that to catch me when I was entering the Super Bowl with a bomb. like some terrorist gets caught because he used some, you know, Snapchat filter 5 years ago, and that's how the government got their facial feature recognition on that guy. Because you'll use those apps and it'll say, "Do we have permission for your contacts? Do we have permission for your info?" And you'll go, "Yes, yes, yes." And guess what? Now they've got all your Facebook stuff linked to your face.
Right.
And then they put that technology into the scanners at the airport and everything if they want to. And now they can more easily, you know, find out who you are, wherever you are.
Yep, absolutely.
And in a way, it's a good thing. Because what are they going to find out? It's going to come up at the airport and they go, "Oh, this guy's got that stupid podcast nobody ever heard of." I'm not worried. I'm not worried about that information getting out about me. You know?
Yeah, I guess the privacy is certainly important for the most part. But, you know, I'm not one of those guys who puts tape over his camera on his webcam and stuff like that. But I do consider it, especially having kids and stuff. And but at the same time, there's a certain amount of acceptance that, you know, we are getting all of this advertising served up, made tailored just for us. You know, all kinds of cool stuff, and the ability to see where your kids are using an app on your phone. But all that information is coming from somewhere and going to somewhere. And so the more that where the world becomes interconnected digitally, the easier it is going to be for the G-men to find you when you're going to rob a bank or whatever it is. So, you know. Yes. So anyway, check that out and more on the Facebook page. I think it's probably getting time to wrap it up. But before we do, I would like to mention that Bure and I will be doing a live Photobomb podcast recording at the FPP's Focus Convention 2019. That's coming up September. And so for all the information on that, go to ruinfocus.com and I will put a link in the episode description to that. We would love for you to bring your families to the beautiful city of Orlando, Florida, and hang out by the pool while you hang out with us at the bar. We're going to do a live recording of the show. Maybe you could even be on the show. Who knows? But that's ruinfocus.com. Check that out. And coming up in January, Bure and I will both be speakers at Imaging USA 2019 in Nashville, Tennessee. So go to imagingusa.org for all that information and the full lineup of incredible speakers.
I will be at the Virginia Professional Photographers Association's convention, or I guess it's probably their fall seminar. And I'll be there next week. Before the next podcast that you hear, I will be there. So if you are anywhere in the Virginia area, you should absolutely come to my program. Saturday, August 10th at the Fredericksburg Hospitality House and Conference Center. Just go to VPPA, I'm guessing.com. Just Google VPPA. Just Google VPPA and you will find everything about this. It's going to be a fantastic. Going to do a whole day, 5-minute photography, gear, shooting, live shooting. It's going to be a fantastic program. So look that up, VPPA on Google, and please come see me there.
Yeah, August 9th through the 11th, moonshine and camera time.
Moonshine and camera time. That's the name of
That's what it says. It's VPPA.org is the website that you're looking
Moonshine
for.
Moonshine and Camera Time.
Moonshine and Camera Time.
Oh, I like that. Pork chops and applesauce.
Yeah.
All right. There's an old reference for you. Okay, so let's do the wind down real quick. Where's my notes? There they are. Facebook.com/photobombpodcast is where you can find us on Facebook. You can find our website at photobombpodcast.com. Gary is at HughesFioretti.com.
Yep.
I am at BureyPerry.com, and you can email us questions at photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later, guys.